Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Hall, and thanks for attending my talk about working on DOS in 2021, because we are getting closer to FreeDOS 1.3. And in fact, this presentation is basically a history, a current status, and a future of the FreeDOS operating system. Now, let me introduce myself. My name is Jim Hall, as I said, and I've done a number of things at open source software over the years, but one thing you might know me from is the founder and project coordinator of the FreeDOS project. And let me provide a little bit of background about myself. So a little bit of brief history is I got my start in computing with the original Apple II. Actually, my family had a clone of the Apple II called the Franklin Ace 1000. It was actually a hardware level clone of the Apple II computer. And it was on that computer that my brother and I taught ourselves how to program in the AppleSoft basic programming language. A favorite thing of mine was to, anytime I saw a computer display on television or in movies, and this was the late 70s, I would try to replicate it on the Apple II. I liked to write a lot of games, a lot of simulations. It was kind of a neat thing for me to do, but eventually I kind of wanted to do more. I wanted to do more with basic programming than what I could kind of do on the Apple II. Well, eventually my family upgraded and we replaced the Apple II with the IBM PC. This is the IBM PC 5150 in 1981. And DOS was definitely a different operating system than the Apple II. Apple II had a very simple command line, but DOS was the first thing that I had experienced that allowed you to use the pipe to connect different commands together. And I thought that was kind of a neat thing that DOS could do. You know, the command line is still pretty simple. And in fact, this is a screenshot of the PC DOS 1. And as you can see at the top of the screen, it doesn't even have a CLS command at this point. DOS was very, very simple. It did have a basic environment, basic A, and that's where I did all of my DOS programming. And so I would write programs in basic, again, writing a lot of little games, little simulations, you know, basic, you know, it did the job. Now, as time went on, Microsoft released MS-DOS 5, and that's really where my interest in DOS really started to soar. I'd been a casual DOS user up until that point, but DOS 5 really felt like a complete rewrite. They had done a lot of new stuff in DOS that really added to what DOS could do. And one thing that I liked about DOS 5 was they replaced the old Basic A, which was then replaced by GW Basic, with a new BASIC system called QBASIC. QBASIC, if you don't remember what that was an interpreted version of BASIC. And it was actually a simplified version of Microsoft's QuickBASIC compiler. And so, yeah, you could do a lot of neat stuff in BASIC. And I used QBASIC in my classes. And so if I needed to do some lab analysis in a chemistry class, a physics class, I needed to run some stuff for a math class, I would write a little program on our computer at home in QBASIC just to run some sort of a simulation. Now, actually, around this time, I started to explore other programming languages. And eventually, my brother taught me about the C programming language, and it was C where I started to write my own versions of the DOS command line. So, you know, DOS had a not bad command line, but, you know, I did notice that you could improve it by writing my own commands to maybe replace some DOS commands, maybe to add some new DOS commands that I felt needed to be there. But that was kind of my first experience with DOS was first with QBASIC and then by writing some simple file and command utilities in the C programming language. But of course, I also loved using all of the applications, right? That was the main reason to run DOS. Throughout college, I used this spreadsheet here. This is the As Easy As spreadsheet. This was originally a shareware program. And if you didn't know what shareware was, shareware meant that you could download a program at no cost. And you could try it usually for a limited amount of time, like might be a month, or they might have a certain number of times you can run the program. And then you really were expected to register the program. It typically wasn't very expensive, usually less than $100, which is way better than paying several hundred dollars for a full application like a word processor, or in this case, a spreadsheet. So this is as easy as a shareware spreadsheet, basically similar to Lotus 1-2-3. And I used as easy as throughout my college career in the early 1990s. Anytime I needed to do lab analysis for the physics classes I was taking, I was a physics major. If I needed to run a simulation, I would do it in as easy as. I lived in this thing. By the way, today you can download this at no cost. It's not open source software, but you can download this at no cost. The Trias, the people who made As Easy As, released a code that you can use to unlock the full program. They also have a copy of the manual. But there were lots of other great things about DOS that I loved. The DOS shell in DOS 5, MS-DOS 5, got a major update. And, you know, there was a DOS shell in DOS 4, but it just wasn't that great. And in DOS 5, they really did update it. I especially liked one feature in here that allowed you to swap between different running programs if you activated that on a 386 or better machine. So, yeah, lots of neat features in DOS. Also, I thought the DOS shell was just simple enough that you could navigate to files and do file operations. And you can see on the bottom, you can make different launchers for different types of programs you ran in your system. And so I loved that. I also loved playing a bunch of games. And so this is Dark Forces. It was one of my favorite games. And in fact, I still sometimes go back and play this. Great game to play on DOS. Played a lot of other games as well. Played Commander Keen. This is Commander Keen, the first one. And this was basically you were a little 8-year-old kid, and you had built a rocket out of parts from your house. And you crash landed on Mars, and so you got to wander around and do different things and basically find your way home. And then, of course, Tomb Raider was originally a DOS game. And so, yeah, all these great games on DOS. And so I loved playing games on DOS when I wasn't doing other work. Now, at some point, I also discovered Linux. In 1993, I discovered the Linux operating system. I was looking to upgrade DOS on my machine. I wasn't a big fan of Windows. I'll talk about that in a second. And I asked around online and said, you know, what can I use? Because I discovered Unix in our computer labs at university. And I thought that was kind of neat. You know, Unix has a very similar command line to DOS. You need to relearn some of the commands, but they're basically all there. So, you know, for example, the type command on DOS is replaced by cat on Linux. Dir is replaced by ls. But other commands are the same, like cd to change into a directory. So, you know, and you could pipe commands from one command to another, except there were more commands to choose from on Unix. And of course, Unix was multitasking operating system. And so, yeah, I had asked around and said, you know, can I run a version of Unix on my home computer? And eventually somebody said, you might want to try out this new thing called Linux. I actually downloaded or bought a Linux distribution called SLS, Soft Landing Linux Systems. And it came with, this is a screenshot of the next version up, SLS Linux 1.05, came out in 1994 with the Linux kernel 1.0. I actually used SLS, I think it was version 1.03, which had as Linux kernel 0.99, like patch level 11, I think it was. And so even then, I could still see that Linux was a very powerful operating system. And I was impressed that people were able to create a free version, an open source software version of Unix to run on PCs. And I was really impressed by that. Of course, there weren't a lot of applications for Linux. And the GUI was, you know, not bad. But, you know, again, you kind of didn't have a lot of applications to choose from. I usually used it to run Emacs, which was my kind of my editor of choice, and a couple different shells, and that made it easy to run different things at the same time without having to flip back to the command line. But it really did open up the power of my PC. And as I said, I was really impressed that people could create a free open source version of Unix and just give the source code away. And, you know, I wasn't a big fan of Windows. And I remember seeing articles in 1994, 1993 and 1994, that Microsoft had said, yeah, we're planning to get rid of DOS in the next version of Windows. The next version of Windows will completely eliminate DOS. Well, if you remember what Windows looked like, and this is what Windows looked like in 1994, it was Windows 3.1. It was not that great, right? I mean, it was very clunky. It was unstable. It would often crash. It felt really slow. So, yeah, and there were some applications for it, but it wasn't great if you didn't have the stability to run those applications. Meanwhile, I could get all over the place with my DOS applications. I could run a word processor. My favorite was WordPerfect, and then later it was Galaxy Write, which is a shareware word processor. And of course, I do all my lab analysis using AsEasyAs, and I completely relied on those DOS applications. In fact, I had dual booted my computer with MS-DOS and Linux. So I'd use Linux to do a lot of my programming, especially for class. But if I needed to run an application like my word processor, like my spreadsheet, I would boot back into MS-DOS and I would run those applications there. We didn't have virtual machines like you have now. So I didn't like the fact that Microsoft was saying, yeah, we're going to totally get rid of, DOS in the next version of Windows. The next version of Windows will completely do away with DOS. And I thought, man, if Windows, 3.2 or 4.0 looks anything like what 3.1 looks like, I don't want anything to do with it. I would rather run Linux and DOS to keep running my DOS applications. And so in June 29 of 1994, I posted this note to Usenet. So back then we used Usenet as basically a discussion board. And so I posted this this note to Usenet saying, I'm going to start a new project to replace DOS. Because I'd actually asked a couple of months before this, hey, is anybody, tracking what's going on with Microsoft? And Microsoft says they're going to stop doing DOS. Everybody said, yeah, we're seeing that. But then it's like, okay, so is anybody writing a free version of DOS? There's a free, Unix system called Linux. So, writing an open source version of DOS shouldn't be that much harder because DOS is pretty simple. So people basically responded to that and said, that's a great idea. And you should do that. And so, not knowing what I was getting into, I said, okay, sure. I'll go ahead and start a project called, at the time we called it PDDOS, because I thought it was going to be public domain. I thought that's really what open source and free software really meant. And so we called it PDDOS. I called it PDDOS also because you had MS-DOS, you also had PC-DOS from IBM, and you had DR-DOS from Digital Research. And so following that two letters and DOS, it's going to be PDDOS. Which I thought was kind of cute. But a couple weeks later, it didn't take long for us to realize that, we weren't actually trying to create public domain stuff. And in fact, we didn't want Microsoft to take what we were writing and incorporate it into their MS-DOS. And so we didn't take long for us to adopt the GNU GPL for a lot of what we were writing. So the GNU General Public License. And that meant that we were free software. And so we changed the name from PDDOS at that time to FreeDOS. So thinking about FreeDOS, where did it go from 1994? So we actually had a website pretty early on. I think our first website was sometime in 1995. Here it is in its beautiful colors of yellow on a black background. Further down, you actually get white text on a black background. But yeah, that was the colors that we had. That was very, very early. We actually were one of the first websites up on the internet. Now, working our way up to 1.0, we had a lot of development very, very quickly. We had our Alpha series, starting with Alpha 1, going all the way up to Alpha 6, starting in 1994 and going all the way up to 1997. And you can see there between Alpha 4 and Alpha 5, that was June of 1995, we had actually changed the name again, dropping the hyphen to going to just regular FreeDOS. And, you know, what was in the Alpha? At this point, we were trying to, basically replace MS-DOS. And, you know, we had a basic versions of the different programs. We actually did have a working version of DOS. However, it was really hard to install. If you wanted to install FreeDOS, you had to do a lot of commands on your own to format the drive. Well, actually, to put a partition on it using FDisk, and to put an operating system on it using Sys. And then you had to copy the files over manually or do an unzip on these different giant zip files. It was a big pain to install FreeDOS on your own. But it was a complete version of DOS. We had a DOS kernel. Pat Villani had reached out to me, and he had written a DOS kernel called DOS-C. And that was what we used as our FreeDOS kernel. So we had a kernel very, very early on. And Tim Norman had written a CommandCom replacement for us very, very early in 1994. And I had written a bunch of other utilities. And we found a bunch of other programs that would basically replace or actually enhance what MS-DOS could do just by looking at different public domain utilities or these different archive sites that that had DOS programs. My favorite one I thought was kind of the neatest thing was this program called Spool. So MS-DOS eventually had a command called print that would allow you to print a command to your dot matrix printer, right? Dot matrix was pretty much the thing back then. And so that would print things kind of in the background. Well, Spool was that plus a little bit different. It actually would print things in the background, but it would actually wait until you weren't doing stuff in your computer before it would sort of speed up. As you were doing stuff in your computer, as you were typing, you'd notice printing on your dot matrix would slow down a little bit. And if you stopped typing, then the printing would speed up. And so it was a great way to provide what felt like multitasking on DOS on those early FreeDOS versions. So what went from alpha to beta? So in 1998, I said, you know, it's, you know, alpha is great, but, you know, it's really tough to install. And so I decided to sit down and write an installer. And I want to say I wrote this over a couple of weekends. As things turned out, I said, okay, I'm just going to write this quick install program. And, you know, it's going to be something that we're going to replace soon anyway. This is kind of just a quick thing to get it done. Well, it turns out we kept that for a long time. that install program got updated a little bit here and there, but it was basically the same install program until I think it was the 1.2 distribution. So beta 1, the reason we went to beta 1 instead of alpha was that was the first time we had an install program on the FreeDOS distribution. It was the first time we really had a proper distribution. And I also decided at that time it'd be kind of cute to apply code names to everything. And so I was a big Linux user, and I liked that Linux had these different code names on it. And so I named every beta release with a different code name. And so I was about to visit my brother at the end of March, and he lives in Orlando, Florida. And so I called it Orlando. I think Marvin got named because I had gotten an email from my university, University of Wisconsin River Falls, where I had started the FreeDOS project. And they were mentioning, among other things, they were retiring the old Microvax. And the old Microvax had these little terminal modems that were called Marvins. And I kind of remembered the Marvin systems. And I immortalized it by creating Beta 2 with the name Marvin. And so every one of these different releases, code names, has a different story behind it. We decided that maybe the code names had kind of run their course by the time we got to Beta 9 release candidate 1. So Beta 9 RC1 was the first to not actually have a code name on it. And that was July of 2003. We were at this point trying to, you know, figure out how we were going to get to 1.0. What really was missing from FreeDOS to get us to 1.0? And there were certainly a number of fixes that needed to happen in the kernel. There were some bugs in some other places. And so we were trying to kind of walk our way up to 1.0. But I think there was also some fear that, you know, if we got to 1.0, would like everybody leave? And so you'll notice that while we did a lot of work in the Alpha series from Alpha 1 to 6 over just a couple of years, and Beta 1 to Beta 8 over a couple of years, it took 3 years to go from Beta 9 release candidate 1 all the way up to FreeDOS 1.0. So we walked ourselves up from Beta 9 release candidate 1 to release candidate 2, 3, 4, and 5 before we finally were ready to have a Beta 9 out there. And then even then, we weren't quite happy with it. And so we released a Beta 9 Service Release 1, SR1, a couple months later in November, and then a year after that in 2005, we released Beta 9 Service Release 2, kind of because we were like, are we really ready for 1.0? You know, are we ready to call this another beta? Do we want to have a Beta 10, or are we going to have another thing? So the compromise, we're going to call it Beta 9 Service Release 1. But yeah, finally, eventually, we made a FreeDOS 1.0 in 2006. And so what's the difference between Service Release 2 and 1.0? I can't even tell you anymore. I think we had finally fixed maybe some bugs in the kernel that people had found annoying. I know that networking and CD-ROM support had been added sometime in the Beta 9 series. But going from Beta 9 Service Release 2 to FreeDOS 1.0 in September 2006, I think it was just a bunch of bug fixes. We just finally said, you know, I think either we're ready for Beta or for FreeDOS 1.0 or we're not. And so we just kind of went with 1.0. Now, since then, development did slow down a little bit. Well, development didn't slow down. A release cycle slowed down. So FreeDOS 1.0 released in September of 2006. It took now 6 years before we released FreeDOS 1.1 in January of 2012. And both 1.0 and 1.1, as I mentioned before, they were using the same install program, just updated, that I had released for the Beta 9, the Beta 1 back in 1998. That was that program, remember, that I thought, well, you know, we're only going to have this for, you know, a little bit before someone's going to rewrite something new. Nope, we still kept that all the way up through 2012. And it wasn't until the FreeDOS 1.2 release that we were looking at maybe changing some things and making things a little bit better and easier to use. I had run out of time to work on the installer. I had always meant to rewrite that installer if nobody else did, and I just never found the time. Well, Jerome Shadell showed up, and he had wanted to help with the next FreeDOS distribution, and so he said, you know, what can I do? And I said, well, you know, I'd love to have a new installer, but I also said, I don't know that the next installer really needs to be the way the old installer worked. The old installer was basically a C program that automated a bunch of tasks. It could have been done as a series of batch files. On Linux, you would have done it as a series of bash scripts. And I said, you know, it just feels like there's a way to do this, maybe as a series of little programs that pop up a, you know, like a dialog box or something like that. And all that's really missing is a clever way to pass, you know, output from one program and be able to branch off and do some other stuff in other parts of the install program. So that's, you know, when it was a single monolithic C program that I'd written, That was easy to do because you just pop up a dialog box and then there's an if statement and then you do something else. As a giant batch file, which is how Jerome did it, there's a lot of clever stuff that he did in there to make the install program do its thing. And so credit to Jerome for writing that new install program for us. It also came with a new package manager. Up until this point, certainly all of our packages were just zip files. So a package in FreeDOS is really just a zip file that has a special directory structure in it. But in the end of the day, it's just a zip file. And so we were able to unzip these files using just the info unzip command that we have on FreeDOS. And so it was very easy to do. We had a little bit of package management in there, but Jerome really added, proper package management with a new program called FDimples. And that allowed you to go in after you've installed and actually use FDimples to install a new package or uninstall a package you didn't want to have on there anymore. And it was really well done. He did a really good job of tracking all these different packages. So yeah, the end of October of 2016, we released FreeDOS 1.2 release candidate 1. And then about a month later, we had the release candidate 2. And then the end of the year, so a month after that, we had the full release of 1.2. By the way, if you're curious about those dates, we decided that we were going to use some US holidays. And so Halloween is the 31st of October, and we said, wow, it's kind of scary that we're getting to 1.2, so scary is Halloween, so October 31st is a release for Release Candidate 1. In the U.S., Thanksgiving is at the end of November, and so that year it landed on November 24th, and so we said this is giving thanks to all FreeDOS developers. We're going to release a new release candidate on Thanksgiving Day. And then as a gift for everybody, we're going to release the full version on Christmas. And so that was a pretty fast release cycle going between release candidate 1, release candidate 2, and then 1.2. I will say things actually have slowed down a bit on FreeDOS 1.3. We had a release candidate 1, and then a release candidate 2, and then finally a release candidate 3. And right now, the most current version is FreeDOS 1.3 release candidate 3. It's actually a very complete version of FreeDOS, but we're having some discussion about what's going to be in 1.3, and things have slowed down a little bit, and so we haven't really been in a big rush to get 1.3 out the door. We are planning 1.3 very, very soon. But it's not out yet. In fact, we probably will have a release candidate 4 before we get to FreeDOS 1.3. So what will be in 1.3 since we're almost there? So, we've had this discussion on the list about what is 1.3, what should 1.3 look like? There had been some discussion about, Let's make sure we kind of draw a line in the sand and we'll understand what is FreeDOS. Well, FreeDOS is and will remain a 16-bit single-user command line DOS. 1.3 is going to follow that definition. We are a 16-bit operating system. We are single-user and we are going to focus on the command line. There had been some questions, especially from some new developers, about, should we add a GUI and should this really become sort of a Windows type of clone? My response has always been, it's interesting that you'd suggest making this into a version of Windows, because that's entirely the reason I created FreeDOS, is because I didn't like what Windows was doing and what Windows looked like. So, yeah, we're not ever going to make, I don't ever see FreeDOS really becoming like a Windows clone. We do include some graphical user interfaces in FreeDOS. We have Ozone, Seal, and OpenGem. Some of those, they've all kind of tailed off in terms of their development. The most complete one in there is OpenGem. It's a very stable, complete graphical user interface. If you've ever used TOS on the Apple system, that's basically what OpenGem looks like. It's also There was a gem desktop on DR-DOS, and that's actually where OpenGem kind of got its start, was that system. But we also had some discussions around, you know, what should DOS do? You know, should we think about where DOS might have gone if Microsoft didn't stop doing development on DOS and hadn't gone into Windows? And so really, if you think about it, you know, what is DOS? And if you were going to imagine sort of projecting forward what Microsoft might have done with DOS after 1995, what would they have done? Well, they probably would have supported multitasking, because you had a lot of CPUs that were multitasking. You would have supported a flat memory model, and you would have supported networking by default, as well as some other features. Those would have all been in there. But, you know, it wouldn't take very long before the old format of DOS executables really wouldn't support the new DOS. And so you'd have to change at some point. If you're going to follow that thread, at some point, you're going to have to change the DOS executable system to be some other kind of format to support all these extra features. And at that point, if you're no longer, those DOS programs are no longer DOS programs, are you really running a DOS? Isn't that the same? To provide compatibility then with those older DOS applications, because DOS is obviously all about compatibility. So if you wanted to run a game or an application that had been written for, let's say, DOS 5 on this newer DOS, you'd have to provide some sort of environment, basically an emulation layer, so that that older DOS application could run on the newer system. And so we got to this conversation. It's like, if you're going to do that, if you're going to try and change what DOS is so that it can no longer run these old DOS applications, the only way you can run an old DOS application is through some kind of emulation. Well, you are definitely no longer DOS. You can do that on Linux today. You can absolutely, you know, run a Linux system in text mode. That gives you access to networking by default. It gives you access to multitasking, flat memory model, long file names, lots of different features. And if you wanted to run a 16-bit DOS application, well, then you're going to run DOS-EMU. So you can boot a FreeDOS, or you're going to run some sort of other environment so you can run a DOS application. These days, you probably run maybe also a DOSBox instead, if you just want to run one little application. Yeah, that doesn't make sense. So yeah, as we looked ahead at 1.3, we said compatibility absolutely is key. We are not a DOS anymore if we no longer run DOS programs, and if our standard DOS executable is no longer a DOS executable. We also in 1.3 wanted to focus on open source. Now, FreeDOS has always been open source software, going back all the way to the beginning. And I've always said there's no point in having a free DOS if it's not open source. If, you know, people can't, not everybody can use it. And if you don't have access to the source code, there's no point in having a free DOS if that's not it. We might as well have, you know, DR-DOS or PC-DOS or MS-DOS. And so we've always had this focus on open source, but there have been a couple of cases where we've been like, well, do we need to really stick to the open source thing if this is a really great application we need to include, things like that? Those decisions, I will say, have actually come back to bite us later on. There was, without being specific about the name, there was an assembler that had claimed to be really compatible with Microsoft assembler, MASM. And we included it for a while, but it unfortunately did not come with source code. But it did have a license that said this is free software. You can, you know, in terms of it's gratis, you can absolutely use it for any use. And a couple years later, we discovered that that was probably not an independent program. It looked like somebody had taken Microsoft's assembler and done some maybe some disassembly or something to kind of modify this program just a little bit to actually just basically change the name and change all the references from Microsoft to another name. So, yeah, it's things like that that really were unfortunate. We had to take that version of FreeDOS down. It was fortunately not in the base distribution. So we just took down the what's called the full distribution. And that's why I want to make sure that every package that's in FreeDOS is open source software. That does mean that in 1.3, we're going to be removing some packages that are not actually open source. One package, for example, is a patch program for Turbo Pascal programs. Now, there's no reason to assume this one is you know, some sort of a mislabeled proprietary program, but it does not include source code. But it's been so useful that a lot of Pascal programmers have been asking us, please make sure you include this in FreeDOS. And because it's got a license, as anybody can download it and use it and distribute it and whatever, we had included it in previous versions, but it's not open source. And so in this next version, I'm making a real push on, is it open source software? Now, by the way, the other challenge that we have with open source software in FreeDOS is that FreeDOS predates the term open source software. And actually, DOS by itself, 1981, actually predates the Free Software Foundation and the GNU GPL. So a lot of programs that are out there for DOS that people have, we've included in FreeDOS or maybe have been updated since then to do other things that are, again, still used in FreeDOS. They're going to come with licenses that are not GNU GPL. They're not an open source license as defined by the Open Source Initiative. But we are looking at those very carefully to decide if they're open software, open source software, sort of free software type of licenses. And so I want to make sure that everything that we include in 1.3 follows that model. So if there's a license in there that's not, you know, a recognized open source software license, I want to make sure that it actually is. And so there's, for example, a lot of programs that are public domain. They've got a statement there that says that. But we've got some other ones that are under some other license just because the GNU GPL didn't exist at that point. We're also, by the way, looking at reducing the complexity of what's in FreeDOS. We've got a lot of packages that we've added to FreeDOS over the years. We had this discussion fairly recently that, you know, we've just added a lot of packages. And so as somebody had a need for a program, we added that program. But we never really went back and looked at, is that still the right program to include? Do people really still need that program these days? And most importantly, is somebody still updating that program? Is that program sort of become stale at this point? So looking at, SEAL and Ozone, those two of the graphical user interfaces, they're no longer being updated and haven't been updated for a long time. Are those packages that we should remove? There's some other packages that are in the distribution in 1.2 that we're looking at. Maybe we don't need to include that anymore. Is that really something that people are going to need, that people are going to try and use? And let's also face it, if you need a program that's not included in the FreeDOS distribution, you know, we include all that stuff, if it's open source, on our archive. And so you'll be able to, download it by going to the website. So we're looking at what packages are out there in FreeDOS 1.2. And as we build 1.3, we're taking a real close look at what things to include and what things not to include. And we're trying to, at the same time, sort of basically streamline the install. With 1.2, you can do a full install, but it doesn't actually install everything. So it's a little bit of confusion that I did a full install, but not everything got installed. I have to use the fdimpulse package manager to install some other stuff. And so in the new version, it's like, all right, so maybe we'll still have some packages that won't get installed as a full install, but everything from all the packages that do get installed, if there's a package group that gets installed, it should be everything in that package group. And so we should be installing, do a full install based at least on package group. But we're still having that discussion about what to install versus what not. So if you're wondering, by the way, partially why 1.3 is taking a little while to come out, it's mostly because we're having those discussions. But we also, because it's taking a while, other development has moved forward. And so we've been talking about other features to include in 1.3. And so one really neat new feature is an updated program that we're thinking about replacing the help system with. So AMB is basically, I think it's called Ancient Machine Book. And so it's basically an ebook reader that is allows you to have these ebooks, and they're kind of based on HTML. And there's a open source way to translate those books into this AMB format. It's not in any way proprietary, and it's a great way to replace the help system. Also, if you want to read an ebook, there's also some public domain ebooks that you can find on the AMB website. So that's one new program that we're looking at doing in FreeDOS 1.3. And we're also looking at making FreeDOS 1.3 have a live CD image. And if you've used the release candidate, you've probably have tested that out. The whole concept being FreeDOS is not that big. DOS should not be a big operating system. As FreeDOS has grown, it kind of feels a little bit more like a Linux system. I'm trying to bring it back a little bit and make it simpler. Do you really need to install FreeDOS in order to use it? Or what if you just booted the live CD? Could you just use it with that? So that's the goal, is that you should be able to boot the FreeDOS live CD and just use a pre-set up version of FreeDOS. It might not have all the packages available to you, because that would be a lot to do in a live CD, but certainly the base version of FreeDOS should be available to you just by booting the live CD. So that's one of the things that we're also looking to do in FreeDOS 1.3. And those are sort of the big, I guess we'll say the big features in 1.3. Now what's coming next? After 1.3, we're not done. We're still looking at doing some other work. So we are kind of keeping an eye on the future. And right now there's a development by a group of developers working on a thing called NightDOS. And that's a 32-bit drop-in kernel replacement for the FreeDOS project. By the way, it's called NightDOS because it runs in protected mode. And in the US, PM really means afternoon or evening. And so it's running at night. So NightDOS, that's why that's PMDOS, basically what that is. So that's a new, one of the major new developments that we're keeping an eye on. They're still working on that, and it's a big task to try and create a new DOS kernel that actually still runs all the 16-bit DOS applications, because, again, if it's not going to run 16-bit DOS applications, not really DOS. So it's a big project to make a 32-bit DOS that supports all these new features they're working on and still runs these old 16-bit DOS applications. So yeah, it's taking them a while to do that. And, but once they get it working, I would look at including that in, let's say a FreeDOS 2.0 is basically an alternative kernel. And then once we know that it's stable and it works, then maybe that would become the default kernel for, 32-bit systems. And if you install FreeDOS on a legacy system, like a 286, or a like an 8088, then you have to have some other kernel, that what we basically call the legacy kernel or the classic kernel, to run on those old 16-bit systems. But yeah, we're watching the development of the NightDOS kernel. Other things I'd love to see added is an alternative DOS shell. I wrote about this a while back, and this is something that is basically looking at a CommandCom-like system. It's basically CommandCom plus a bunch of stuff. So I would love to see, rather than just doing something like what 4DOS did, where that was, we're going to basically make a version of CommandCom plus a bunch of cool utilities. It's like, well, why don't we actually make this a significantly different DOS shell? Still command line driven, but let's use, instead of a standard batch file thing, let's actually borrow some stuff from BASIC. So if anybody out there is looking for, how do I contribute to FreeDOS? I want to write something really cool. This would be a really cool thing to write, is to write an alternative DOS shell. I think that there are ways that you can, and I've written an article about it, that that you could do to expand a DOS environment, the DOS batch file environment specifically, and still maintain compatibility, still be able to run those .bat files. And if it ran on, let's say, MS-DOS 6, it should still run on this new alternative DOS shell. But if it's got extra commands that don't exist in, let's say, MS-DOS 6, that would allow you to, for example, add integers together, to assign an exit value to a variable, so you can might which you can already kind of do, but it's like basically how can you branch off into different things. There's a lot of different ways that you can expand on DOS by basically borrowing from BASIC, so that way people can make DOS even better. So that's what we are looking for kind of after FreeDOS 1.3. Lots of stuff to do in 2.0. Now, I think today that you're going to see most people running FreeDOS inside a virtual machine. And that's certainly how I do it. But we do know that a lot of people like to keep running FreeDOS on actual legacy hardware. Getting kind of hard to find the original IBM PC or even a 286 these days on an AT. But they're out there and people do keep working on them. You're seeing more people that are running Pentium class hardware, maybe even some 486 hardware. And so that's great to have. But I will say that, you know, if I were to look at all the people that are downloading and using FreeDOS today, I would say most of them are probably running FreeDOS in some kind of virtual machine. And that's actually, even if you're curious, that's actually how I run FreeDOS. I run FreeDOS in a virtual machine on Linux called QEMU. And I think that'll continue in the future. I think it's going to be harder to keep these old hardware up to date and working. And I think you're going to see more people running FreeDOS in a virtual machine. Anyway, that's kind of the past, the present, and the future of FreeDOS. And at this point, I'll pause and I will take questions in the chat. So thank you very much.